You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for August 28th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from Breakfast with Trump, Egg, Sausage, and Trump, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Egg is off. We always go to Trump. It doesn't have too much Trump in it.
I don't like Trump.
Oh, I love it. I love Trump. I'll take yours.
You've heard Trump to me.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a good post you wrote this week. You basically took the whole script from the spam and just plugged in Trump, and it is a commentary on our media.
Well, and really on MSNBC, on all of the media, but MSNBC really is. Hey, let's watch what's going on today on the Trump show, because it's fucking wall to wall Donald Trump, and a reporter, Connie Schultz, I believe. Mm-hmm. Talks about why they're doing this, because their ratings are up.
They're addicted. It's crack. It's crack.
Newspapers, you know, their clicks are way up. Their revenues are way up. Their viewership is up. I mean, you know, this is why, if you tune into MSNBC in the morning, and I would urge you not to, because it's awful. It's just it is not even Fox Light anymore. It's just
Fox. It's Fox. It's Republicans trashing Hillary. That's what it is.
It's a bunch of giggly beltway zombies. Mark Halperin and Joe Scarborough and that entire frat boy douchebag crew just trashing Hillary Clinton for 3 hours and giggling over Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. That's it. That really is all there is to it. And this goes on for 3 hours a day, every fucking day on your liberal television, because Phil Griffin is a coward and a capitalist and wants to make money. And you know what? There ain't no money in telling liberals anything or talking about the truth at all. So where's the money? Where are the clicks? Well, according to, I guess, his business people say, give them what they want. What do they want? They want to see Hillary. They want to see a fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we have
horse race and a boxing match.
Yep. And so every day, bang on Hillary Clinton. Just bang the hell out of her. Just every day. There's email suspicion and keep bringing people on who spin, you know, 3 grains of sugar into a mile high pile of cotton candy of speculation, and just keep on that every fucking day.
Ignore Bernie Sanders.
And ignore Bernie who?
Yeah.
I have no idea who you're talking about. And Donald Trump. Trump. Because they're in New York. Trump drops by every now and then. He puts his feet up on the table. You know, Joe Scarborough asks him if he'd like to, you know, bust out his shine box and ask him how he'd like it today. Would you like it shiny or buff? And that's it. That is your liberal media now. That's all it is.
Hey, Driftglass, you and I are recording this Friday morning. And
we are.
I wanted to just maybe frame our podcast, and I know we have a lot to talk about in the time we have.
We do.
But frame our podcast in terms of what happened this week, day by day.
Oh, sure.
Because so often what I do, and particularly when we record on Friday, I tend to do this, is just surf the web for 10 minutes and find a billion things that we could talk about today.
Right.
And forget that Jimmy Carter taught Sunday school last Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, and we just forget that.
A million years ago.
That was forever ago. Uh-huh. And, you know, that is the way the media operates. It's always the current thing. But I don't want to forget that Jimmy Carter taught Sunday school last Sunday. And I don't think our podcast should forget that. There was an editorial in our local paper that actually originally appeared in the Peoria paper. So, you know, another cornfield away.
Yeah.
this editorial is Bless Jimmy Carter. And it talks about how this is not an obituary. This is a appreciation for all that he has done to make the world a better place. And I just wanted to read the last 2 sentences of it. This nation and the world are better off, and more than a few of its inhabitants are healthier, happier, and freer because this fundamentally good person was in it and never quite decided to retire. He should know that, and before his time runs out, as inevitably it does for all.
Yeah. Yep.
And so while we start talking about Trump and shootings and Morning Joe and Rand Paul and Scott Walker's assholery and on and on and on.
Yep.
Our attention is grabbed so many different ways all the time. And the focus that Jimmy Carter had every day of doing what he felt God called him to do to help humanity. Could we all be more like that? That's, you know, at some point I want to drop mic and end the podcast there, and we're not going to do that.
Well,
but
however, as you know, Blue Gal, Jimmy Carter is history's greatest villain.
Yeah, well, and you're talking also, I got to say, you're talking to a Kennedy 80 veteran.
Right.
So
hey.
I know what a hypocrite I'm being right now. He was the best ex-president we ever had.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. We're still sort of making our way slowly, slowly, slowly through the Invisible Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And we're right about
Well, you are. I gave up on that book.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll tell you why.
Not because it's a bad book.
No. And Rick Perlstein's an amazing researcher and a good writer and knows what to leave on the page and what to leave off the page.
Right.
I can't take it anymore because so much of what is going on with the history of Reagan in the 70s is still going on today. Phyllis Schlafly is still there.
Yeah.
Karl Rove is still around.
Alex and, is still there.
Yeah.
The CPAC is still there. All the think tanks are, and the issues are all still the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had forgotten that Phyllis Schlafly rose. I never forgot that she rose to power. She's an awful, awful person. So, of course, she's going to become incredibly wealthy and influential among the pig people. But her issue was the ERA.
Yeah.
Which was a totally non-controversial, you know, the
bipartisan thing.
Yeah. Until she just a humble housewife.
No.
A
Harvard MBA.
Yeah.
Yes.
Decided she finally needed to rise up and talk about how women should shut up and go back to the kitchen.
And not share bathrooms.
And that was the problem. You were going to make boys and girls share the same poop room. And look at what would happen there.
And now that's the argument about the trans movement, you know, is, oh, we're going to have to share a bathroom when somebody has a different wee-wee than we do. Yeah. Yeah.
But
okay.
This was the rise of the conservative think tanks as influential. This was the rise of the Joe Coors and Richard Mellon Scaife, the crackpot.
I was say the billionaires.
The billionaires
funding this stuff.
Yeah. Roger Ailes made his first attempt to create GOP TV around this time with the backing of Joe Coors. This was the creation of a voter movement that was, there's too much goddamn government regulation. That's the problem.
And the launch of Rush Limbaugh.
At the run of the launch, well, the launch of Rush Limbaugh was 10 years later.
In what year?
In the 80s.
Early 80s?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Reagan had to get rid of the Fairness Doctrine before Rush Limbaugh could be syndicated
on a million stations.
That had to happen in that order. But it was the rise of the voting suppression. It was the rise of the idea that abortion is a monstrously evil thing. It was pretty much, you know, there were like a handful of people at the first, you know, anti-abortion rally, and then it became a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it became murdering children. The idea that we shouldn't teach anything in textbooks in history classes that says anything bad about America ever started during this period too. The entire template for the modern conservative movement was hammered into place as Jimmy Carter was becoming the president.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's been a really long time since then, and they haven't changed much. This was the rise of Richard Viguerie and the mailing list.
Yeah, yeah.
And I understand the exhaustion because the thing that they all have in common, all these movements have in common, is not just that they're 40 years old, but that they are fucking relentless. They never give up. They never ever, and they all have a ton of money behind them.
Well, and that was the thing that had me in tears on the way to church on Sunday, was watching a little bit of Up with Steve Kornacki.
Yep.
And the panel was discussing how one of the secrets of Donald Trump is he's great for ratings, but he is now increasing the price of advertising for the debates.
Yep.
And one of the panelists mentioned that, you know, in 2012 with the debates, and the debates were a mess. Everyone acknowledges there were too many people on the stage. Mm-hmm. It was snippy and distracting to have that many people there. And I don't think 10 is any less distracting than 17, but that's beside the point. And one of the panelists said, look, in 2012, Reince Priebus decided when the commercial breaks were going to be.
Yep.
And it was a party news activity. Now, Roger Ailes decides when the commercial breaks are going to be.
And how much he charges for advertising.
Yeah. So it's now no longer a informative. I mean, it wasn't that informative to begin with.
Yeah.
But it's no longer a news program. It's now a business model program. And I felt at that point when they were laughing about that on the panel and on my liberal TV, like, okay, it's over. You know, we're not going to have issues-oriented politics anymore.
No. And the spike in revenue dependence on
the wealth in Washington, D.C., that is a place, and New York City media markets, where poverty never enters either people's experience, and I'm talking about the Morning Joe people.
Right.
People's experience or their conversation.
Yeah. When I was in D.C. Years ago, in a different job, I used to go there on occasion to brief congressional staff, believe it or not. It was explained, one of the many, many things about Washington, D.C., which is a lovely city when you just walk the streets and see all these institutions, is that it's a city that never has a recession.
Right.
There's never a recession. I mean, the people who live in D.C., the poor people are poor. And the problems of urban blight are as real there as anywhere. But the people who work there never have a recession, because whoever is in power is that's where the money is coming from. That's where all the decisions are being made.
And if you're out of power, then Richard Mellenscaife writes a check for the think tank for you to do oppo.
If you're
conservative, for the rest of the time. Yeah.
If you're liberal and you're out of work, you get to work at Walmart and blog on the side. Hey, speaking of economics, Black Monday, since we're going through the week.
That we are going through the week and Black Monday, and the idea that 2.5 years of underemployment for a lot of Americans isn't a story, but a hiccup on the part of the Chinese stock market is a day-long panic attack on the part of the news media.
Yeah.
And also the impression that is left that what happens to Wall Street affects all of us. What happens to you in your house affects nobody.
Right. Right.
Is so poisonous.
Well, I will say that, A, that is true. We are no longer necessary to the functioning of this country. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's necessary is Washington, D.C., New York City, parts of Los Angeles, and background actors, extras, spear carriers. Mm-hmm. We need a whole bunch of rubes and idiots to vote conservative assholes into office. And we need a bunch of hippies to be jumping around and screaming about it so we can punch them in the face and call and blame them for everything. We're just, you know, we're just Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
I heard that Sippy Cup said we're to blame for Trump.
Yeah, we're to blame for everything. Well, yes, yeah, Sippy, S.E. Cup made the case, provocative case, that the reason Donald
Trump...
She's
nothing if not provocative.
She is. Well, you know, she knows what she has, and she uses what she has very efficiently. And she knows the people she's talking to. She's talking to old, bigoted, drooling, white assholes on who love watching her be sassy and sexy and look at them and talk and pretend and wear her smart girl glasses. Donald Trump, apparently liberals are to blame for Donald Trump, because liberals are to blame for everything because of the PC jihad that liberals have been waging all these years has made it impossible to talk honestly about anything. And Donald Trump is just a reaction to the overwhelming PC thought police power that we liberals exercise over everyone and everything. How that power slipped out of our hands during the last 40 years, I don't know. I don't know how George Bush got elected, but of course he didn't. That's the thing. That never happened. That happened before 2009, so that never happened. Yeah, and Eric Erickson says the same, pretty much the same thing. It's Donald Trump exists not because the Republican base are really, really horrible people who believe terribly
bad ideas,
terribly ignorant, angry, stupid, fascistic things, and they've been trained to do that like SEALs. Rather, Donald Trump is a reaction to the fact that the Republican Party leadership has capitulated completely to the Kenny usurper, especially over the matter of Planned Parenthood, which just murders babies for money. Uh-huh. That's the real reason. And so that brings us to Trump Tuesday.
Trump Tuesday and Trump Wednesday, and where Donald Trump kicked a reporter out of a press conference.
Yep.
And you watched that, and then I watched it. And what was your reaction to that event?
Let me give you my after-action report. I agree with Glenn Greenwald.
I do, too.
I agree with Matt Taibbi. I agree with Glenn Greenwald. Absolutely. You heard it here first, good people. When he's right, he's right. And it wasn't a hard call to make. I thought Jorge Ramos behaved like a dick. But he behaved like a dick like Sam Donaldson used to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, shout at the guy in front because he won't take your fucking question.
Yep.
I thought it wasn't a question. It was a statement of activism and principle with a question mark at the end of it. But so what? It's no worse than other reporters do. I thought the complete lack of response from every other reporter in the room practically was shameful. This isn't the president of the United States. It's not a prime minister. It's just a goddamn candidate on the goddamn campaign trail.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, and this is where Trump kept his word. He said, I will not give up the microphone.
Yeah.
I think it was shameful and weak, loserish, because, you know, the important things are losers and winners. I won't give up the microphone to some, you know, I might have someone else do my fighting for me. You might remember he said that about Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know what?
He would never give up the microphone. That's weak. Yes, that's weak.
And his supporters loved him for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he invited Mr. Ramos back in, and they sat, and Trump...
Well, let's not forget what happened in between time. Yes. While Ramos was out in the hallway, one of Trump's supporters told Ramos to get out of my country.
That's right. Get out of my country. Uh-huh.
And
they're brown shirts, honey. They're fucking
brown. Well, that's what someone on Twitter said. Kristallnacht comes to, you know, the campaign trail.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you want to do all of this Nazi referencing stuff. But
no.
It is interesting that the brown shirt has not been named. And no one has said who this person is who said this to him. He's just a nameless soldier in the fight for freedom for white people, right?
That's right.
And never mind that Ramos is an American citizen.
Yeah.
This is the thing that divides truth from fiction. When you when you push back with people, and I had this exchange on Facebook. I don't want to take too much time away from it, but from what we're talking about. But this woman, I posted something about God said love your neighbors, and that includes Mexico. And she said, I love Mexicans when they're in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
They need to stay on their side and be in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, first of all, your last name is French, which means there's a strong possibility that your people came over on a boat as refugees. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where did your people come from? I mean, I know I'm first generation American on my dad's side. He was born in England. He came over on a boat as an infant. Where did your people come from? We're all immigrants. Most
and now,
of us, you know, 99.999% of us are immigrants.
And now you're down the rabbit hole arguing with someone who is not going to listen to you.
Oh, she didn't. Well, the interesting reaction was they don't pay taxes.
Right. Yeah, they do.
That was her answer was they don't pay taxes.
Yes, like, they do.
Yeah, they do.
Well, they don't buy food.
They don't buy in Mississippi. Food is taxed.
Right.
There's sales tax on milk and bread. So
are they solar powered? Are they nuclear powered?
Because they buy gasoline.
They sure
do. And I said that. And then it was she said something else. And I said, well, what about the people who are American citizens and are third or fourth generation American citizens, maybe longer than you, and just have Mexican, Hispanic, Latino last names? And that's when she disappeared from the conversation.
Well,
because it's not about immigration at all. It's about those people and my tribe, and I want my tribe to be in charge, and I want white supremacy. And that's what this is about.
Well, and, you know, we are a couple of ticks away from proposing that you be able to prove your Aryan bloodline going back six generations.
Exactly.
But arguing with these people is pointless. Yeah. It is pointless. They're not human.
Except for the audience that is watching, and there were a lot of people watching that conversation.
Yeah.
And that's why I think sometimes it is valuable to engage and continue with facts, because other people in restaurants and workplaces and so forth, they're going to have these conversations. And as you and I have always said in the 299 episodes we've done,
yes,
part of our job is to provide a vocabulary for those conversations.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think that's valuable.
My respectful disagreement is minor, but it is. It's 2015. Anybody on the fence is just brain dead. Just you have been asleep. There's nothing I can do.
Or you've just really consciously decided to check out on politics.
Or you spend your day, you know, with a plastic bag over your head, huffing both cider glue, because you can't stand the idea that if you actually have to breathe clean air and look at the world the way it really is, you're going to have to start looking at Republicans and say, these people aren't fit to be citizens in my fucking country. Mm-hmm. These people are a danger. We're at war with these people. This is no longer I forget who wrote it. I think it was Matt Taibbi. Donald Trump is no longer funny. We're at war with these people. Yeah. It's not a shooting war, but we are at war with these people. And either they're going to win or we are. Mm-hmm. And they're currently doing a really good job of rallying their insane base and our
well, and buying the voice box, buying the stage.
And our media
we have these conversations.
And the only place where the public square, the debate forum, the place where we're supposed to settle our discussions, where we're supposed to hash this shit out, is being destroyed by the both-siders corporate media. There's no place to have an intelligent discussion about immigration anymore because our media is dead. It's been co-opted and destroyed. You can't report on the fact the Republican Party is insane without putting Sippy Cup on the stage to give the other side of that argument.
Yep.
And I don't have any faith in audiences anymore. I really don't. If audiences were smart, Fox News would be out of business and MSNBC would be spinning off its third network.
Yep.
Audiences aren't stupid, but they're busy. They don't have time to think about these things. They don't have time to watch. And here's the other part of Trump Monday and Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump said one of the truest things about media. This is where Donald Trump.
Oh, this was amazing.
Says,
I found this. Yeah.
He says incredibly true things about the media and incredibly true things about the billionaires who own our political system and own our politicians. In between, you know, what I wrote was he's running the campaign Rand Paul wanted to run, which is something sensible and radically true, followed by a whole lot of crazy shit.
Mm hmm.
And Rand Paul.
And tell him about the true thing that he said this week. That was
the true
amazing.
Thing. Yeah, he was giving his crazy ass speech in Iowa, and he said, "Look, the reason all of these cameras are red lighted," he pointed out to the audience, "all these cameras are here, and they're all on for one reason: ratings. The only reason they're here is ratings. I make ratings. These people are not your friends. These are terrible people. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They don't care about this country. All they care about are ratings. And if I weren't making ratings, they wouldn't be here." And man, that was the truest goddamn thing I've heard in a month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And coming from a crazy person. But
and the only thing, to segue, the only thing that took Trump off the front page on Thursday was shooting on camera to reporters.
Well, I hate to say this, so I won't.
Okay. I will delete that out.
No. Two random African Americans getting shot in Chicago would not be a story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Two white people getting shot is a story. Two white people getting shot on camera is a national tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, but no, it's you know.
Well, and then they are reporters, so they are part of the family of the people that are on air.
Of
anyway,
course.
So
and it's not.
And not that that's not a legitimate grieving to have.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it really is. If it happens on camera, it's important.
Mm-hmm.
If it happens to white people on camera, it's really important. And, of course, it launched its own weird political discussion over on Powerline. They're saying, well, Dylann Roof and this guy are basically two halves of the same. They're pretty much because both sides, because you have to answer all arguments relating to blood and violence and craziness with both sides. It can't be, you know, one thing or the other. You can't have an honest discussion about this. And of course, the cherry on top of this argument is Joe Scarborough saying that the reason Hillary had her press conference. Is that
right? Yeah, at that time. Mm-hmm. Good timing, right?
Mm-hmm. Because she knows there's this headline out there, this all the cameras are pointed over at a shooting, so she can say this stuff. It's on purpose. She did this on purpose. She timed it on purpose. And
it's almost as if she timed the shooting on purpose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
And this is your liberal TV. And of course, side by side with him and today, I didn't watch it because I really, really don't like these people anymore. I really hate
it's bad for your health to watch Morning Joe, people.
I watch the Twitter stream.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting. And if something pops, I will click over to it or I'll turn it on to see it, to see if it's worth writing about or blogging about or commenting about or what have you. But I don't want, because they're awful people. And they are out to wreck this country. I mean, Joe Scarborough is an enemy of democracy. Mm-hmm. And he has his own television show on My Liberal TV 3 hours every day. And when he invites robot douchebags, awful, awful people like Mark Halperin on to talk about how, you know, if a Republican ever talked about a Democrat, you know, and use being friendly
about terrorists.
Because Hillary Clinton said, you know, we condemn ISIS for their policies towards women, the way mm-hmm. they treat, the barbaric way they treat women. Over in the Republican Party, there are candidates who believe you should be forced to bear the child of your rapist. That is
as a 10-year-old.
Yes.
As a 10-year-old.
And what's the difference in this regard between these two groups? It's barbaric and it's awful. And Mark Halperin said, well, you know, if a Republican said that, you know, the world would come
stop
to
spinning.
Yes. Yeah. And no one reached across with a heavy object and just slapped him unconscious and said, look, dude, the last 6.5 years, the fucking Republican Party for which you toady every day has been calling Barack Obama a terrorist, a friend mm-hmm. of terrorists, a friend of the Muslim Brotherhood, mm-hmm. a secret terrorist, a secret Muslim, every fucking day. And nobody punched this fucker's lights out. And nobody ever will.
Yeah.
That's the thing that drives me crazy. I will mention in passing that there's a David Brooks column today talking about the pathetic response America's having to ISIS. And it's an entire column where David Brooks never once mentions George Bush, Dick yep. Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, or David Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
And he will get away with it.
Yep.
He will keep getting away with it. Joe Scarborough will keep getting paid mountains of money. Mark Halperin can call the president a dick and get a 1 month slap on the wrist and be back on the air forever. John Sununu's kid. You heard about this? Yeah,
no.
Can take a $750,000 bribe. This is the Boston Globe story.
Oh, my God.
John Sununu has been taken off writing the tech beat because
I did hear about this.
He was given a $750,000 bribe by technology companies while he was a quote unquote reporter or was given a column. Yeah. What will happen to him? Nothing will happen to him. Nothing. Nothing happens to these people. There's no consequence. And this is where we have to start tipping things in a different direction. Because until there are severe consequences mm-hmm. for doing these things, they will keep doing them. This is just a puppy that shits on the rug. Until you rub the puppy's nose in it and swat him or her and say, no, bad dog, they're going to keep doing it.
And one of the ways we can do that is win presidential elections.
Yes.
So I want to end our conversation with one funny thing and a couple of positive things.
Okay.
Rand Paul has decided to white-splain to Black Lives Matter again.
Thank God. Thank God.
Maybe you shouldn't call it Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
He says to Sean Hannity.
Taking branding advice from Rand Paul is pretty impressive.
Call it Innocent Lives Matter instead. you know, and don't try to take the microphone or try to yell at people because that's kind of negative. It makes people feel bad. And he just.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say that is one step up from Scott Walker, who said, I don't want to talk about Black Lives Matter. I want to talk about things that matter.
Yeah. I want to talk. Right. Yeah. I've got a short list here the Koch brothers gave me to read.
Really? He screwed the pooch this week. I guess the Koch brothers' phone line was down or something because he had three opinions about birthright citizenship in like 36 hours.
Yeah. Well, the software patches were not ready.
We're not in there. No. Yeah.
But here's the thing, Lou Gal, here's the thing. It won't matter.
It won't matter.
No, nobody in his party will hold him account to. People will hold up three Hillary Clinton emails to the light and talk about the font size on them before they will ever talk about. By the way, have you noticed that Scott Walker is a robot fascist who's programmed by the Koch brothers? No, that's the fault of the media.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely the fault of the media. Our media is so broken and so complicit and so bad. I've just about given up on it. I will still watch Chris Hayes from time to time. I will watch Rachel Maddow, but that's about it. There's nothing
else.
So
let me give you some more good news.
Okay, I love good news.
Let me give you a couple good news. Black Lives Matter launched a Campaign Zero list of 10 things that the conscious asks, you know, really
excellent
thought out policy changes that they are looking for.
Excellent.
They all seem reasonable. There was a good article, I thought, in New York Magazine critiquing these and saying that here's a couple of other things that could be asked for. But it was a friendly article saying, look, this is a really good start.
Yeah. Good.
And we had really a major victory with the Labor Relations Board this week that is going to be swept under the rug. You're probably not going to hear about it on any Talking Heads program at all. But unions are being given wider opportunity to negotiate with parent companies when they work for franchises. It is the Labor Relations Board voted 3-2 to say, look, this is the reality of 21st century work, that you work for a franchisee. And the fact is that the parent company controls the prices, controls the product, controls the environment in which you work. Therefore, they actually control you as a worker.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be able to negotiate with them directly.
Can I tell you?
This is a huge victory for workers.
Can I tell you a funny story about that?
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I was at a thing where that was discussed as a disaster. I will say no more than that.
You do attend meetings where you are in a suit from time to time.
I do.
Discussing economic development and economic.
I do. I attend lots of things. Whenever there's an opportunity to participate in my democracy and weigh
wasn't
in.
Wasn't there an elected official who was Republican?
There was an elected official at one of these events.
Who wanted to go back to the days of surpluses.
Who opined. When there were 30 seconds left on the clock and so forth. And it was, you know, a largely friendly audience.
Yeah.
That he got a wistful look in his goofy face and looked towards the middle distance over the horizon as if seeing an apparition of Ronald Reagan beckoning to him from across.
Riding a unicorn.
Riding a dinosaur with Jesus across the Great Plains of America, which used to be great until Barack Obama ruined everything.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, and he would really like to, and I'm translating loosely here, you know, gut Social Security and Medicaid. Get rid of it. Because the social programs, they need to be fixed. By fixed, you mean gutted.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about cutting military spending. We're certainly not going to talk about farm subsidies, because if you touch those, you won't get elected again.
Right.
So, but basically, programs for people who aren't in this room, who are probably poor, need reform. And then maybe we can get back to the days of surpluses, and it was just the late 90s and early 2000s, these days of surpluses. And I just, okay, all right. And it was not, and there was a moment where it was, does anybody here remember what happened to those surpluses? And the answer is, of course, no. It was something that happened in the past. It was a very long time ago. No one can really be sure about anything that happened before 2009. Liberals often talk about George Bush running on a platform of getting rid of the surpluses, but, you know, liberals are full of shit. They just make stuff up. And tax cuts always pay for themselves, so couldn't it be those?
Right, right.
And Iraq War, that's pretty much everyone was
blah, blah, blah. Okay.
You know, ask any David, read any David Brooks column, young man, and you'll see that the Iraq War was really both sides were to blame for that. It really has become baked into their psyche. Mm-hmm. They don't remember what happened in the past. They will not remember. They'll recall the highlights of certain past epochs. They'll remember how good things were in the 50s. And you'll say, well, yeah, there was a 90% plus top marginal tax rate, and one in three jobs was unions, and we spent a shitload of money on public works projects. They don't remember that part. They just remember that, you know, we were happy and my dad had a job and my mom was at home and we had a nice house. Well, yeah, you did, because there was a fucking middle class. Mm-hmm. And you've worked the last 40 years to get rid of it. So surprise, surprise. Of course it looks good.
We have to end with one more piece of happy news.
Oh,
glad.
Okay. Happy meetup, Blue Gal.
3 million total listens for our podcast.
I know.
Thank you, guys.
Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing. And our 300th episode is next week. We're just going to do an episode, but we'll probably mention that in the 300th episode.
May I offer a suggestion offered by youngest child?
Sure.
About our 300th episode?
Mm-hmm.
That we ask our listeners via this podcast, which you're recording right now, and the Twitter, which I understand is a thing, and via the Facebook, to submit questions to us.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
We will answer as many questions as we can without revealing any state secrets.
She wants to do an AMA. That's what she wants to do. Yeah, ask me anything.
Mm-hmm. And I'd also like to hat tip a commenter at my site, MedicineMan55. Who had the perfect analogy? He used a robot chicken version of this.
Roger Ailes says Lando Calrissian.
Yes.
Someone else wrote me and said Trump is a Ferengi.
Yeah, that's. But there's that quote.
I don't know why. What's the Lando Calrissian quote?
Well, the Lando Calrissian, this deal's getting worse all the time.
Yeah, this deal's getting worse all the time.
And Trump as Vader.
Pray I don't change it again. Yeah.
I have altered the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Alter it anymore.
It's like, yeah. Oh, fuck yeah. You know, and who said this? We never said anything about giving a hand to some bounty hunter, you know? Perhaps you feel you're being treated unfairly. No,
it's fine.
No, fine. Roger Ailes has once again signed a non-aggression pact with the belligerent to his West. And once again, Donald Trump can now do whatever the fuck he wants. He has protected his right flank. And he just keeps winning because he understands the Republican Party as the only people who understand the GOP and are willing to sort of poke sticks at it. Are liberals and Donald Trump, in a sense. We understand what they're doing and why. They won't talk about it. The media won't talk about it. But Donald Trump will. And that's kind of weird and sickening and hilarious all at the same time.
So thank you, everybody, for 3 million listens. It means a lot to us that you care and keep clicking. I know that's not all your mom, because
no.
3 million is too many.
It's 1 million.
Over the top.
About 1 million. But yeah, submit your questions, if you would.
Yeah, I think the best way to reach us is email.
Yeah.
So that's proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Put AMA in your subject line so we can find your questions, because we get a lot of emails. So, and we'll do that. What a good idea for youngest child.
I get 2 emails a day every day from Alan Grayson.
See?
And the Dean boys. Something, something Trump, something, something $3. Something, something Planned Parenthood, something, something $3. So all I ask is that if we had a dollar for every listen...
Yeah,
we would
still do this podcast, I think.
But you know what we'd have, Lou Gal? We could buy our own congressman.
But I'd want him to be fabulous like Aaron Shaw.
I think we should go get a fabulous congressman from some urban area. No, we have plenty of fabulous people in our local area.
We do.
And give them a lot of money, and we should have a really fabulous Democratic congressman from our...
And he should be he or she should be fabulous.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Spike, and I have to say, Spike looks like a professional cat model.
Yeah.
Okay, he just obviously knows where the light is, where his paws are, how what his good side is. It is a cat food bag picture for this week's internet kitty. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, and it is getting cooler out there a little bit, if you're out there buying a latte, remember us and buy one for us by sending us $5. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. I have to tell you, Driftglass, that thank God we do not know the names or email addresses or any personal information about who is ordering via our Amazon link.
A lot of porn, Blue Gal? A lot of porn?
No. But someone, we do have a list of what people buy, which is kind of weird. And someone ordered a lot of law school textbooks this week via our link.
Yeah.
And when you order a $175 textbook and give us 4% and it costs you nothing,
that's
I felt like a bootlegger's wife.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
In fact, that reminds me, I have to get the embed code from you because I have a couple of commenters who've asked where my link is on my site. And, well, you're right.
Put
I should put
up
it
there. Sure,
right.
Why not?
Yeah.
We do believe in buying local. Believe me, we do. But we also believe that if you are going to buy something at a big box store, go ahead and shop Amazon with our link and forward our podcast, the proceeds. It doesn't cost you anything extra at all.
Fight the power.
Approximately 1% of our listeners actually send in a check or PayPal donation to this podcast with a contribution. You can do that too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you. And maybe next week I'll pull off some reviews from there, from those two places, because there's some people said very nice things there. That'd be a nice way to celebrate 300 episodes. So if you want to be read on the air, go leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher Radio.
And remember, next week, Stephanie Miller is on vacation. So,
well, you know,
this is all you got.
I think the 3 million, you know, we're in this hiatus where Jon Stewart has stopped being on the show. The new Daily Show hasn't started. The new Stephen Colbert hasn't started.
Yep.
So we're filling in the gap, people.
And Mr. Robot was postponed.
And that's okay.
And, well, as an amateur reviewer, I saw the episode. And all I can say is,
no, you didn't.
When they kill Mr. Robot, it really messed me up. I never thought they'd go there. I never thought they'd actually kill Mr.
You didn't see
no,
the episode.
I don't see anything. Nobody gives me anything but grief. No.
But, yeah, that was sad. That was sad that shooting happened. And that's the decision of the...
I thought it was great. I thought it was a great decision. I think art lives in the world.
Yes, it does.
And
yes, it does.
People who make things said, you know what, it's disrespectful and irresponsible to do this right now. We'll postpone it a week and maybe we'll edit it a little bit.
And they ran last week's episode again, which was worth watching again, I thought.
Yep.
So,
watch the popcorn.
Watch the popcorn, people. We're just saying.
Just keep your eye on the freaking popcorn.
Keep the eye on the popcorn. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Hey, Driftglass.
Hey, Blue Gal.
How are the internet kitties doing this week?
Blue Gal, the internet kitties are praying for a craft beer with His Holiness, the Pope.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Jeff Glass.
Science Fiction University, Dog-Faced Herman, remembers a time in 1992 or 93 when he shared an apartment with a friend who was a computer nerd. One day his friend roommate ran out into the living room and yelled, "I just got Harlan Ellison's phone number."
Everybody had Harlan Ellison's
phone. Everybody had Harlan Ellison's phone number at one time.
Apparently he was in the book for a while.
Oh, well.
For a long time, for in the LA phone book.
Really?
Yeah. He didn't want to hide.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, Dogface Herman says, "I talked to my old roommate the other day about this," and he said, "Yeah, I did in fact call Harlan Ellison, and Harlan shut me down real quick."
Yeah. Yeah.
Harlan would have a way of doing that. Anyway.
He did. Well, I'm one of the lucky people who have talked to Harlan Ellison many times.
But you actually talked to him without him hanging up on you, too.
No. Which is nice. I got a note from a third party saying, "Harlan wants to talk to you." I thought, oh, crap. I'm going to die. I'm going to get hurt real bad. And it wasn't. He wanted to talk politics and wanted to talk about stuff. And I did some art that he liked, some graphic artwork. And I sent that along for his permanent files. And he helped edit a story of mine, which never sold. But I can say this fucking story right here is as good as anything that ever came out of the Clarion workshop.
And I do think that he also pointed out to you after he helped you focus the story, and also then it was rejected, and he went, yeah, I've had a lot of things rejected.
Yeah, yeah, don't worry about it.
It doesn't matter.
Well, if you're a writer, you've been rejected many times.
Yeah, so.
And it goes with the territory.
The idea that Harlan liked your story.
Yeah.
And then, somebody else didn't like it, so what? Fuck them.
Well, there are legendary stories about the Clarion Workshop where he would break writers, or would discover brilliant talent. And I think Octavia Butler was one of his
discovery, sure.
And the fact that I am not published in that company, but the fact that I can join that company, who Harlan has looked at my stories and said, "This is good.
Yeah.
It needs a tweak here and a tweak there. I have some questions, really deep X-ray questions about how you thought through this sentence. But overall, this is really good. This is worth publishing. I'm sending it to my friend with a personal note saying he should definitely consider publishing it."
Yeah, but you know who else got published, Drift Glass? Hitler.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, self-publishing, That's the way to go.
I'm on a roll now.
Yeah.
All right. Today, Science Fiction University clips are all about identity. All right, so let's start with number one.
"Now, when I say he was a good man, I don't mean that he hadn't had a bad thought now and then, or that he hadn't committed ordinary transgressions against society. But after all, that's the problem of civilized man's soul, isn't it? That the good and evil in it are constantly fighting one another?
There's a higher source from which the good can find aid in its fight, Doctor."
"I realize that, sir, but..."
"Of course, the Colonel and I have always felt that a person can be good if they wish to be. And, well, otherwise if they don't."
"Look here, I simply must get this straight."
"Well, let me put it this way. Good and evil are so close as to be chained together in the soul. Now, suppose we could break that chain, separate those two cells. Free the good in man and let it go on to its higher destiny, and segregate the bad."
"But aren't you a bit presumptuous in assuming that there's evil in all men?"
"Oh, but isn't that true? Wouldn't we be hypocrites if we didn't admit that? After all, we've all had thoughts that we didn't want published or shouted out loud, and we certainly have had desires that are not confined to a drawing room. Why, as Christians, we admit that man is created weak."
Okay, that is Father Flanagan. Or Flanagan, depending on which. Catherine Hepburn's lover.
Yeah.
Spencer Tracy, the great and good. The great and noble Spencer Tracy, who's playing both Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
In 1941. Yeah,
I believe the special effect in that movie was him shining a flashlight under his chin. But the acting was really good. I mean,
That's a good movie.
Yeah.
All right. Number two is a TV show. See if you can get this one.
"I've been thinking about what you said. I mean, about what your father said. And, well, I don't see why you're so concerned about him. He's dead. And besides, I've heard that your father was pretty dull."
"Valerie, stop it! Stop talking about my father! Can't any of you understand? I loved him. I cared about him. He was good and he was kind and he cared about me. Not what I wore, not the way I looked, but what I thought, what I felt. And what's more important, he cared about himself and his dignity as a human being. Valerie, he didn't die in the Ganymede incident. My father killed himself because when they took away his identity, he had no reason to go on living.
I just don't understand you, Marilyn.
Valerie, can't you feel anything?
Oh, man, I should know that. It's got the dialogue, an Outer Limits maybe, or a Thriller or some, I don't know.
It's a Twilight Zone.
Oh, okay. All right.
It is a Twilight Zone from 1964. Number 12 looks just like you.
Oh, yeah.
Applicants, yeah. Yeah. With Susie Parker. So.
There's a biopic of Rod Serling. Mm-hmm. And they use a clip. I swear to God, they use a clip from that episode in it. So I've seen a clip of that show mm-hmm. way more times than I've seen the show. Good. More Twilight Zone. That's definitely science fiction, man.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Number 3.
These diplomas from reputable universities, they can't be forged.
Mr. Wilson, I assure you, every item is bona fide and valid.
How could I even approach such a professional level? I couldn't...
Oh, very simple. You are already established in a position of some dignity. Oh, nothing conspicuous, just a solid, mildly successful sort of thing. You will be supplied with fresh paintings periodically. In time, you'll perfect your own style. Surreal, primitive, impressionistic, whatever. It will be a transition from this present work. You see, you don't have to prove anything anymore. You are accepted. You will be in your own new dimension.
Yeah, I have no friggin' idea. I'm not doing as well as I thought I might on this
well,
sojourn.
I'll give you a hint. Mm-hmm. This is not the Manchurian Candidate.
Okay. So, of all the movies in the universe, they're not Manchurian Candidate.
Not the Manchurian. This is a movie called Seconds, from 1966. It is also directed by John Frankenheimer.
Uh-huh.
And
that's Frankenheimer.
Dog-Faced Herman just wanted to screw with you and not do something easy like a clip from Manchurian Candidate. So.
Yeah, I hate Dog-Faced Herman.
All right.
I really
love Dog-Faced Herman.
Yeah, we do.
Number 4, see if you can get this one.
Take away a man's life, memory, and payment for his crimes, and it's still not enough. Where does revenge end and justice begin? Forgiveness is a hard thing, isn't it, Theo?
I don't think anything can ever be more difficult.
Brother Theo, I'm ready to go now.
Good. Good. I'll walk you to your ship, Captain. This is Brother Malcolm. He has just joined the Order under most unusual circumstances. I asked for him specifically when I heard he wanted to serve others. He's about to leave for the monastery back home, where he will be trained, and trained well.
It is all that I've wanted to do my whole life, as long as I can remember. It is an honor to meet you, Captain. I've heard so much about you.
You must excuse the captain, Malcolm. You interrupted his train of thought. I believe you were saying that forgiveness is a hard thing, but something ever to strive for. Were you not, Captain?
Yes. Yes, I was.
I actually recognize one of the actors from his voice. And I think the scene is, it's about revenge. And I think the person who is Brother Malcolm has actually been like hollowed. His identity has been wiped.
Yeah.
Part of his punishment.
Yep.
Which is like personality deconstruction.
But he's joining the monastery as kind of a blank. Yeah.
And will go away forever and ever. It's brother something or other. So this is Joe Straczynski's creation, Babylon 5.
This is Babylon 5. That's right.
Yeah. There's a lovely episode where each alien race is talking about their religion.
Mm.
And each one of them says, this is what we believe. This is what we believe. And the commander says, oh, we'll come down to the cargo bay and we'll show you what we believe. And he has lined up, you know, as far as the eye can see, a Buddhist monk, an Irish priest, an atheist, a Taoist, a Zoroastrian, a Native American, and they're just all lined up. And we believe all these things. It was a lovely, lovely, it stayed with me for years. It was a lovely scene.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very humanitarian show, very humane show in the way it talked about the human race and our future. Yeah.
All right, number five.
Each day I would dispose of as much loose skin, fingernails, and hair as possible to limit how much of my invalid self I would leave in the valid world. At the same time, Eugene prepared samples of his own superior body matter so that I might pass for him.
Let me see. Your skin and your fingernails would be Gattaca.
That's right. That was not a hard one.
Yeah, no. Now, do you remember who played the old man?
No. The guy who played in Gattaca, the young man, was the guy who was in Birdie also.
Yeah.
And I can't remember his name.
I believe the old man, not the wise old man, but the sort of scientist gatekeeper, I believe it was Gore Vidal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's right. And what's his name was in it? Your favorite short actor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Jude Law is in it.
Jude Law. Yeah. They made sure he didn't stand up.
My favorite 5'8" actor. Yes. Yeah, he is. Gore Vidal plays director Joseph.
Yeah.
And Ethan Hawke plays Vincent. Yeah. It has Uma Thurman in it, too.
So, of course it does.
It's got the Uma. All right. And the last one.
Sometimes it's good to talk these things over.
Sometimes I have these dark thoughts.
What kind of dark thoughts?
I don't know. But I'm afraid I'm going to hurt someone. I feel like I have to be stopped.
I'm not sure why. Sometimes we must embrace that which opens up for us.
Embrace.
Life can be a curse as well as a blessing.
Oh, come on. That makes up for seconds there, Dogface Herman. That would be Battlestar Galactica, the good one, not the crappy one, which everyone should see, except for the last half of the last season, which, you know, kind of went all lost on you.
Uh-huh.
Kind of went rogue and derelict and, holy crap, we're not sure what to do, but the rest of it's good. And that's Gaius Baltar talking to Boomer, I believe,
mm-hmm.
who didn't know she was a Cylon.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
All right. You wanted to talk a little bit. There have been a lot of science fiction in the news this week.
Yeah.
Kind of political science fiction news. I was particularly thinking about the whole Hugo Award.
Yeah.
So several alert listeners sent us links and notes about, oh, by the way, did you see that conservatives were trying to say that the Hugo Award should be all multicultural, multigendered and stuff.
All that shizzle.
It should be a boy's sandbox. And an old white guy by the name of George R.R. Martin said, yeah, that's going to go real far.
Yeah. You know what? you know what the proper reward for popularity is? Buckets of money.
You want to be popular?
You got to have an award, too, really? It seems kind of selfish. Yeah.
And I've been, Drift Class, I've been singing a song when I hear about white men behaving this way. And it goes like this. Forever alone.
Yeah.
Forever alone.
Just me and my gun magazine.
Yeah.
And a bottle of Curel.
That's,
yeah. That's pretty much it.
That's pretty much it.
In my bunker.
Yeah. You know.
Because eventually, you know.
Ladies love it when you tell them they shouldn't win science fiction awards because they're chicks.
After World War III, then they'll love me. Because I'll have all the beef jerky and ammunition.
And in the bunker.
They'll have to sleep with me then. Yeah.
And before we get into some of the other stories about science fiction, I did want to give a shout out and a signal boost to a book that came out almost a year ago called Octavia's Brood.
Yeah.
And it is a book of collection of science fiction from social justice movements.
I'm literally looking at it right now.
We own it. Uh-huh. And there is an excerpt in there by Mumia Abu-Jamal, the activist and prisoner, about Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
And talking about America and Star Wars and how America wants to be Luke Skywalker, wants to be the rebel good guy.
Right.
And what we are at the same time is the Empire.
Yeah.
And so he makes a really nice poetic connection between the recognition that Luke Skywalker has. Sorry, spoiler people, that I am your father. That he and Darth Vader, you know, are of the same family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the United States recognizing or not, you know, but the recognition that America is in its, while it is attempting to be the good guy rebel, also the evil empire.
Yeah.
And it's very poetic. It's a short piece, but I recommend that book and wanted to give that a shout out. Okay.
It's full of social justice thing by people of color. Oh my God. Which means the Hugo
Wait,
Award.
Are they yeah. gonna win? But they can't win an award, can they? Oh. All right.
Well, I got an email from a very old friend of mine from my Chicago days, who I worked with a long time ago, who I haven't heard from in a really long time. And he said, when I heard about this thing, I went through your archives to see if you talked about it. So people do come back to my blog, even after a long hiatus, when something just pings them the right way. And this seemed to ping a lot of people the right way. There was a group of people, I would say libertarian / conservative guys, for the most part, the puppies. I think they were called the sad puppies, and a subgroup of that called the angry puppies, who thought that this the Hugo Awards, which you can vote for, become a member, you can vote for the Hugos, had become too, you know, multicultural. And science fiction was losing its white guy engineer military roots. Or that's my interpretation, which is hilarious because I didn't live through this particular crisis, but I was reading science fiction at the time, back in the 70s when it was the chicks are taking over. Oh my God, look at all these chicks who are in here ruining our clubhouse. It's Ursula Le Guin and Omega McKay and all these chicks, and we worked really hard to keep women out of here. And I recall someone saying thank God for muscular male writers like James Tiptree Jr.
Who's a chick?
Who's a chick? Who's a lady? But it's funny. It happens in country music, I suppose. You know, when the new folks come along, there's always a new wave. So it's stupid. It's a stupid controversy. It's nothing's being taken away from anyone. There's plenty of room for everyone. What happened during the first golden age of science fiction, or the second, depending on how you look at it, is people who could write started writing science fiction. You know, it wasn't just focus on gadgets and how to melt an ice cap from far away because you understand how microwaves work. People stopped fiddling with gadgets and started writing stories. And then people who were graduating from English programs and literature programs and short story training instead of engineering programs, they came along and upped the literary thing again. So there is a long history of the people whose beloved science fiction of their childhood is being taken over by the hordes, freaking out and overreacting. But this
And I think there's a similar story to be told in the world of activism.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've talked about that before, but Black Lives Matter being a brand new movement and not wanting to learn from past mistakes or past experiences is very similar to that.
There's a certain amount of convenient forgetting that we didn't like it when Harlan Ellison came along and pushed Joe Hall, you know, Isaac Asimov aside, even though they didn't, even though they were very good friends. It was a very different group of young writers who came of age in the 60s and 70s. And there was a sense that the old guard was being pushed out of the way, which wasn't true. But some people could hack the new kind of the new quality of writing. Some people couldn't. Some people retired. Some people didn't. But there was a reaction, a backlash against that. There was a backlash against women. There was a backlash against the rise of the dirty hippies. The environmentalism was looked down their nose at. But there's also a really clear message of white male privilege here.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what? The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein has a very clear social message to it. It's just that when that's your default setting, you don't see it that way.
Yeah.
The clear libertarian overtones of that story, the fact that, you know, if only we could just hand out rough justice on the streets, if only everyone was armed, if only we were working towards a libertarian paradise.
If we let white guys run thing like God intended.
Yeah. Well, you know, a couple of the protagonists in there were women.
Yeah.
But it was clearly the political system that they had embraced was Randitism.
Mm-hmm.
That has a very clear political message. But if that's what you believe the world should be,
you don't see it. Yeah.
So there are lots of messages embedded in your favorite fiction. If you believe in the political world, we have mentioned a woman named Katie Abrams every now and then, who freaked out and became a Tea Partier, a leader in the Tea Party movement, who swore she had never been political before, even though she had definitely been political before by her own description. But she didn't recognize herself as political because the country was at the time operating with a white male Christian conservative president. And that's
the default position.
That's the way it should be. Yeah. And suddenly there's this black guy who's not a Republican at all, who's a Democrat. And oh, my God, he's got a scary name. Now her country's fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, everything was fine. Now suddenly everything's gone to hell. Same thing. And it always gets down to one thing, the quality of the writing. Does your writing – is the quality of what you're producing excellent? And I don't care what your social message is. You know, there's a lot of criticism for H.G. Wells. Later in his career, the saying goes, this is a riff on an old Bible verse. He sold his birthright for a pot of message, as opposed to a mess of pottage. He sold his creative gifts for an ever more kind of dull thumping political diatribes. And that happens to people. It happens to me. But what matters always is the quality of the writing.
Mm-hmm.
How good is it? How well is the story? The story I'm hyping everybody on is The Martian. I love that book. It's pure science all the way through, problem solving, problem solving, problem solving. But there's a very clear social message at the end. I won't give it away. But
talk instead about Ray Bradbury's FBI file.
Yeah. Well, the juxtaposition of Ray Bradbury's FBI file and Neil Gaiman was perfect this week because on the one hand, an outfit called the Muck Rock did a FOIA request and got a hold of Ray Bradbury's FBI file.
Mm.
And Ray Bradbury's FBI file was every bit as fucked up as you would think it would be. And I'm just going to pull some quotes. I'm looking at the page right now. Quotes in it were like definitely slanted against the United States. The general aim of these science fiction writers is to frighten the people into a state of paralysis or psychological incompetence bordering on hysteria. they might not be card-carrying communists, but they were at least fellow travelers. On and on and on it went. It might be a lucrative field, I'm quoting again, for the introduction of communist ideology. blah, 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 blah.
And the fact is that Bradbury was anti-McCarthy, big time.
He's anti-authoritarian.
Fahrenheit
451 is about as anti-authoritarian as you can get.
Yeah.
And my tagline for my blog is from Ray Bradbury, which is, I don't try to predict the future. I try to prevent it.
Mm-hmm.
Cautionary tales were a lot of what people were writing at the time. And Ray Bradbury was absolutely one of the best at that. The idea that humans might go to the Mars and become just spoilers, as it says in the FBI file, as opposed to developers, was horrifying. Even though it was clearly an attempt to tell people, please stop screwing up nature. Please stop destroying the planet. So the idea that Ray Bradbury had an FBI file full of dire warnings about science fiction generally and Ray Bradbury specifically, because it'll screw up your head, man. It'll turn you into a fucking commie. That came out just about the same time as this article in which Neil Gaiman is quoted as having been on a tour and went to China. And the Chinese state government has officially, apparently, allowed people to start reading and, I guess, writing science fiction. Why have they done this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that from their point of view, they've gotten very good at imitation and manufacturing, making stuff, but really bad at inventing things. The creative process is inimical to totalitarianism, because you never know where the creative thing is going to go. But they sent people over to this country. Probably, I'm not sure of the details, but it wasn't sneaky. They just sent people over to investigate and interview creative people here, people in the engineering field and science field, I believe aerospace and so on and so forth. It turns out a whole lot of young scientists and engineers and inventors and so on read science fiction when they were kids.
So there you go.
And it sparked,
that's the key.
It sparked them to be creative.
Mm-hmm. And have imagination.
And, right. and try to solve problems using imagination and thinking in creative ways. And again, I'm not telling anybody to buy any particular book at all, but as a genre, science fiction is a unique and interesting thing because it has been so good at predicting social trends and warning about social trends. But the juxtaposition of our FBI terrified that people reading Bradbury fiction might become communists and the last communist party on earth trying to read science fiction because they've gotten stodgy and ossified and need to find a way to become more creative and inventive is hilarious. But it goes to the point that this is what art is supposed to do. Good art, popular art, is supposed to challenge you. It's supposed to make you think. Even if it only makes you think a little bit, it should ask you to become engaged in the artistic process as an audience and should leave you thinking about something afterwards. It should leave you wondering about the future. It should make you think about your humanity and where your place in the world is and what your country is doing and so on and so forth. And very good literature does that. And the reverse of this is Poole's Law,
mm-hmm.
which is 90% of everything is crap. So you know what? 90% of all science fiction, all art, all television, not this podcast, mind you. Every single one is solid fucking gold. But 90% of everything else is crap. So it's important that excellence be allowed to rise to the top and be recognized. And in some eras, if excellence is doing its job, it's threatening to people. It's threatening to people who love their white male military science fiction. It's threatening to people who are trying to pretend America is a happy, happy place where nothing ever goes wrong. Creativity is always threatening and it's always disruptive. Mm-hmm. And there's never going to be a way to contain it and direct it in the way that the establishment would like it contained and directed, because the essence of creativity is to overthrow the establishment. And there's no way around that. So,
right.
Welcome to Science Fiction University, boys and girls. There will be a test. Thanks, Blue Gal.
All right. Thank you, Drew Glass. Have a good day, everybody.
All right. Well, then I love you.
I love you, too. I'm going to hang up now.
Okay. Bye.
Not on you, just for you.
Just for me.